Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm your host, Sully, and we're discussing the best moments of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's right. Just got to revisit everything, just comic books, superheroes, as well as just why do they still click? Well, what are the moments that, you know, in either the adaptations themselves or the comics that just really just gel, that just make one say you are watching one of their properties. So here we got Kevin Thomas.
Hello.
Hello. From the Marvel Movie Minute, Pete Wright.
Oh, hi.
Oh, oh. And Andy Nelson.
Hello.
And as always, the most reliable rascal on the planet, Oreo, is back in the studio. Welcome.
Damn Skippy.
So yeah, you guys have been plugging away, been going through a good chunk of the movies, and of course there's no shortage of Marvel, so
no, there's plenty, and we've been covering it minute at a time over there. We're currently in our sixth season looking at the Avengers, so you know,
it's 17,000.
Yeah, it's a much slower process. Jesus than their Christ. Release
Yeah,
I'm currently working through the Civil War arc right now.
Oof, yeah.
It's another fun. Big... There's a shit ton I missed when I first read it, and now that I've got about 90% of it with me, and I'm almost done. Wow.
I'm still catching up on the MCU TV shows. I still have, well, what is it? Loki, Falcon and Winter Soldier, Moon Knight, and one other thing to catch up on.
I'm Ms. caught Marvel? Up on pretty much all of it. I just have to watch some of the latest movies. And but yeah, we did an amusing ranking last year along with DC, and DC was another one where it's like, hey, instead of spending less time on the CW shows, I'm going to spend more time on these Max shows, and that was a better idea because it's a lot of fun, and you got to see the different versions and properties within, and virtually all the shows you could find playing somewhere, whether it was HBO Max or even Tubi and Netflix, you know, they were pretty much all on there. And
I guess in terms of shows, I know I'm like 20 years late to the party, but I just started the Justice League cartoon a couple weeks ago.
Nice. That's good.
My friend suggested it to me, and I was like, okay, I've got HBO Max. I was already kind of going back through old BTAS episodes that I had seen in reruns as a kid. And then I realized, like, I've never seen this Justice League cartoon. Let's see how that is.
It was always on, I wouldn't say it at awkward times, but more like at, like, in that close time in between, like, when you should be going to bed and when, if you just want to stay up a little later, you can watch something before Adult Swim starts, you know?
It's a shame that didn't get an Adult Swim treatment, honestly.
But it was pretty interesting timing. Like, my uncle or even dad would just, like, put it on, just they needed something in the background. Nah. When they had something on, if not that, then something else on TNT or Sci-Fi Channel to just put on and just find something interesting. Yeah,
nice. Yeah, I think the Marvel TV shows that I grew up watching, again, in reruns, because I was like 1 year old and like six when these were coming out, but like I saw all 65 episodes of the 90s Spider-Man series in reruns.
That thing was the best.
I'm pretty sure I saw all of Static Shock in reruns. Ooh. And then, what's the other one? X-Men Evolution. I saw all of that when they were airing them on, I think it was either Disney XD or they had another name for it at the time.
Oh, I think.
Yeah.
I know the one you're talking about.
They had on Jetix. They were airing X-Men Evolution on Jetix for like all the stuff. Years. Mm-hmm.
That's why I kind of had a sense that Disney and Fox were going to play ball together, just because they would borrow each other's material for the longest time, you know, on the various cable channels, you know.
Yeah, I mean, And then, like, I've attempted to get into the X-Men cartoon. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know what it is. Like, the writing's good, but I feel like it's weird to me that they tried to give the character designs a more realistic look. Mm-hmm. It's just very strange to me seeing cartoon characters with, like, again, with more, like, accurate, more human-looking features, and the writing is not, the writing is very mature and not exaggerated, really.
True.
It's just kind of, and then, like, it's a little bit jarring for me with, like, the visuals of it and the comic bookiness of everybody's costumes. Hopefully I can get over that. But
you should check out the art book for X-Men too. It's really, really good.
Okay. Yeah, it's it seems like a good show, and I understand why it's, you know, I've seen the pilot where Morph dies about 8 times in life. It's like out of pure circumstance. Like, the thing, like, I've seen that episode so many times, and so now whenever he yells like Wolverine, I'm like, you're dead.
That wimpy cry.
Like, oh, that just, yeah. I've seen that episode so many times, just out of pure coincidence. It's like, all right, God, I'd like to see another episode of the 100 that I know exists.
That reminds me when I watched.
Only 100? How about 200?
Or however many episodes there are, I've never counted. But, like, yeah. I know they had like 5 seasons of that show. So like, I'd like to see another one.
Yeah, that reminds me when I watched The Adventures of Lois and Clark, and it was on reruns, and every Saturday they kept playing the same fucking episode, and I'm like, come on, give me more. I want to see what happens after this shit. And I gave up on it. I was like, fuck it, better then. Never know what happens to him.
I don't think most people do.
I've never seen I've not seen a full episode of that. I know of it.
You don't need to see a full episode of that.
Yeah.
What happens. You might not know what happens, but you know what happens.
I just presume Superman saves the day at the end of everyone.
Everybody's sad. Oh my there's God. Grief.
How'd
there's
you know?
Trauma. No, I'm just kidding.
I like Dean Cain as Superman. One of my favorites.
I just like his bad movies. They're amazing.
I saw Tomorrow Never Dies a few months ago, and somebody mentioned that Terry Garr was Lois Lane, and I was like, yeah, I can see that.
Nice.
Wait, what? Oh, God.
What?
I love the Gen Gap. It's fun. It's like, you know different things, but you haven't seen this, and then you see a character, and you're like, oh, yeah, they could totally play that person, and then you find out they played that person. That's so awesome.
Yeah.
It's so wild. So there was this amazing comic, which was basically the X-Men versus the Avengers or something to that extent.
Oh, yeah. X-Men versus Avengers, Phoenix Force and shit. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. And I can never find the exact, like, comic book art.
It's a collected book. Yeah, it's just called Avengers versus X-Men.
Okay. Interesting. But this one had a particular, like, different cover, so I'm just trying to find it. But it was... It was a great read, just very vivid, very well illustrated and animated. And I was here to pick up a family member from college, and they're like, where the hell are you? I'm like, I'm in the library and I'm not leaving.
My favorite X-Men comic art that surprised me that I really enjoyed was X-Men Phoenix End Song and War Song, because it was a collab between Marvel and Top Cow Productions. And I didn't know Top Cow at the time. I just read it. I was like, wow, this art is so fucking good. And this was 2005, by the way. Not early 90s, late 90s or anything. This was 2005 art. And it's still ahead of its time. Still ahead. Way ahead.
There's many of these comic posters which you end up getting to that moment where you're like, I want to frame this. This is
beautiful. Yeah, right? It's like, damn, and Top
Cow. The guy drew, they didn't just draw this. They didn't just make a good living doing what they're doing. They may as well be like the top animators of all time or something. They need some institute award.
Damn. Something crazy.
But yeah, there are times where you just look at them and you're like, man, that's just gorgeous artwork.
Yeah. And then you see the other artwork and it's like, what the fuck are you trying to prove here? And then you come across the J. Scott Campbell wannabes and it's like, go away.
Oh.
Yeah. I saw that while I was reading Civil War and I'm like, I hate that aesthetic.
Totally. In terms of the movies, I do have to say, most of the pre-MCU versus current MCU, most of them that involve a lot of the physical characters are really good at just like starting off with like showing a tactical action or just showing just the character just kind of just like they pretty much fell in their first mission and you know that they are going to kick a bunch of ass like in the remaining of said chapter. So it is wild how with Punisher and even the Blade movies you get the instant like carnage right up front and then you get, and then you settle down. And while with Captain America, like when they started him off, it was interesting how Joe Johnston decided, you know, I'm gonna do literally what I did with the Rocketeer movie that no one saw, that's actually pretty good, you know, where I just have
we love that movie.
Oh, totally. You have all the soldiers in the background. It's kind of funny, mildly, where they're struggling to keep up with the high-powered, you know, main superhero. And they're shooting at the Nazis in the background, and that's just awesome. And then you're seeing our main guy. I just love how they have... They show how Captain America can really just, like... You know, he's in it to win it, and you actually can applaud him for like throwing his shield in first to cushion his fall.
Yeah, I guess it's in a similar vein to that. So like now it'd be called the older MCU movies, the bit in Thor where they go to the ice giant planet and he just throws his hammer around the entire place to take out a bunch of them at once is pretty cool. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's just a thing that makes me smile. Like, yep, I'm here. I'm going to take care of this. Screw diplomacy.
Diplomacy. Yeah. What's that?
Let's not forget that it ends with him, you know, hurling his hammer right through the head of the Jotun beast.
not
a subtle man. Say it's a good finale for that one.
That is actually, that's an interesting comment, that like the way the action just sort of starts in those earlier movies, because since the MCU is so much about origin story, like we get so much of like, oh, here's how Tony Stark was in a cave and he built the thing, and we get to see from the beginning, but you don't get that. Like, I, you know, I'd written down one of my favorite moments, and mostly because I'm such a Nightcrawler guy, like he was my jam from the beginning. Like X-Men 2, that opening sequence of X-Men 2 is fucking dynamite. Like,
everyone's getting kicked in slow motion.
God, and then bamfing, like legit in the White House is stunning to me. That was just like, I remember, like, I'll never forget, like, the chills that ran down my spine. Like, they figured this out. Like, it's great. It was cast well, it was written well, and man, those effects were perfect.
Oh, yeah.
And that aged like fine fucking wine. Oh, I already watched that. I'm surprised, like, it's so dark for 2002. I'm like, damn.
Yeah. I just rewatched X2. Like literally 2 weeks ago, and I hadn't seen it in a number of years, and when it opened like that, I was like, I did not realize how amazing this was. Just going in there and taking out the Secret Service like it's nothing, and you have no clue what's happening in the best way.
Well, that's what's exciting when they capture a character that you've only seen on the pages before. But it seems like, oh, this is how I always had it in my head, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's like, I mean, look at the first two Spider-Man films that Sam Raimi did. I mean, same thing with the way that even just like Spider-Man, like
bigger and
the
better
first time takes on Green Goblin at the concert there. Mm-hmm. It's just like everything about that was like, this is how Spider-Man always, you know, it always made sense to me. And then when you see it on screen like that, it's like, oh wow, they actually figured it out. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Nightcrawler. It's just that's what makes these moments work so well. And
yeah, so versus exciting. Nowadays Marvel, where it's like, oh, let's throw in jokes for half the fucking film.
Well, most of the moments on my list are like
jokes.
Looking at it, or no, actually, most of the moments on my list that I love are not like jokey things. And most of them aren't even MCU things. Because it's like, yeah, like I enjoy the MCU. I look at, honestly, I go into them and I go in with the headspace of I'm watching a children's movie. Yes. And so when they have all these dumb jokes, I'm like, yeah, I laugh at a good number of them. But I don't know. It's just like, yeah, I know some people hate this phrase, but yeah, Marvel makes movies so that like 11-year-olds can watch most of the time.
Yeah, and then occasionally audiences, right?
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, I enjoy feeling like an 11-year-old every once in a while, but it's like, you know, I would appreciate if they would get a bit more serious now that they've got Kang around. I'm like, all right, you can't have him being all serious and Shakespeare over there, and have somebody cracking a joke about how they just got jelly on their shoe and it's disgusting.
No, like it's not a good flow. Like they keep watering down characters to the point where they lose their complexity from their origin. And it's like,
I think it really depends on who's helming it. Cause like,
yeah,
they have to compromise each installment. And I get that. Like this said installments, like that featured character is going to have like one intro, maybe one battle scene, and then the rest are going to be the main guys who carry the main narrative that installment. I really do hope though they can do a cool like versus event. I think that would be fun. It's unlikely, but it would be fun. And I altogether, it just would be interesting if they go beyond just whatever phase they want to go. And I know they're bringing back all the R-rated Netflix verse guys because they were just so popular. There's some good moments in there. How those always end. Jessica Jones is having to fight
her
supernatural mentor. Luke Cage is going after some old childhood friends who have wronged his neighborhood. And then, of course, you know, Daredevil just showcase making you be able to take the Kingpin serious. You know, Wilson Fisk is very deadly, and I just, after that movie came out, which people like or hate, you know, it felt like it was pretty easy to just lay it on that. I think that's just it. Like half the time you would see these movies, and because the movie had infamously illustrated said character, you weren't sure how anyone could reinterpret it because everyone was becoming more and more familiar with the adaptation versus the source material, you know.
I grew up watching the Daredevil movie, and so I have a fondness for it. I recognize what's wrong with it. Like I recognize that the show is technically better in pretty much every way, but I'm always going to have a soft spot for Michael Clark Duncan's version of the Kingpin character. I think he probably more than he and Colin Farrell seemed to understand exactly what movie they were in, and so they were having a lot of fun just kind of playing up to that. Like, we're playing fictionalized comic book characters. Let's go nuts. Right. And then you've got Ben Affleck and Jennifer Garner in there who are trying to, they're playing it more seriously, and so you have scenes where they're in it together. It's like, you guys are in different movies almost. Like I remember there's one shot where it zooms up to Daredevil's costume. It zooms up on Daredevil's costume. I'm like, oh, that looks so ridiculous. in this dark and gritty world you've set up. Like, his costume does not look good in well-lit scenes.
Oh, no.
Well, it's a muted costume.
Well, still, like, the few times we see it in the, like, somewhat brighter light, like, it looks goofy. And I thought the Netflix show did better in terms of, like, you're almost never going to see it. We're going to keep it in shadows 99% of the time. And the few times you do see it, you're like, yeah, whatever. But you don't see it that much.
They do have interesting cinematography in those early adaptations to where it does kind of make you want to wonder, well, what did you guys have for inspiration when, you know, there was horrible inspiration back then? You just had to.
Yeah, when Michael Clark Duncan was cast, they chose him because there was nobody else physically imposing at that time frame. I mean, now, granted, they could have picked Big Show, but
yeah,
he would have been a good fit. But honestly, it wouldn't have worked at the time because he would have been more cartoonish. Whereas Michael Clark Duncan was established from doing Green Mile.
Yeah.
And he still had the build going on. And boy, he's a Stackhouse motherfucker, and it's a damn shame he's dead.
It was like every scene he's in that movie, he just owns it.
We'll return after these messages.
Hello and welcome to Culture Shocked, the pop culture podcast brought to you by four aging millennials and our outdated opinions. Join us every Tuesday as we discuss movies, TV, games, and even music, new and old.
Dude, what do you think you're doing?
Are you seriously trying to record a promo without us right now?
Well, yeah.
Dude, you can't just do the promo by yourself. Who's gonna listen to that?
Yeah, and you probably haven't even told them that we're a pop culture podcast where we always agree on everything. For instance, the Sam Raimi trilogy easily being the best of the Spider-Man movies.
No. But I think we can all agree that Jaws is a classical masterpiece.
Nope, don't like that. But we do all agree that the sequel trilogy of Star Wars is the best in the Skywalker saga, right, guys?
That comment is so ridiculous. I don't even know where to
Anyways, that'll do it from all of us here at Culture Shock. Thanks for listening.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide all across the globe. We are in the US, we are in the UK, we are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan, we're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode, we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Every time he's on, I'm like, wow, you knew exactly how to play this.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wish it was a lot more of a physical fight, even in the director's cut of that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. But it's like, oh, well, if it had been more physical and shit, that would have been a lot more fun.
Not everything has to be like Spawn, Oreo.
I know.
Spawn. Oh, God. Spawn.
Hey, at least that film is the most accurate CBM around.
Oh, it is. That's
it is. Accurate. They changed better. Two things. They had Angela. You had Sam and Twitch. And what they changed was Jessica Priest was subbed in for Chapel, and they renamed the company. That was it.
Wow. Okay. So everything storyline wise that happened in that movie is in the comic books too.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's
pretty glad you asked.
When I watched it.
Wow.
Go watch the director's cut. I'm not kidding. It was cool seeing Sam and Twitch. That was so cool.
I think I saw I'm pretty sure I saw the theatrical cut of it in college, and me and my buddies were watching it going like, this is unlike anything I've ever seen.
Because it's Image. Everybody's like, Spawn. One guy on Twitter I saw in an argument, he didn't like Spawn because he wasn't Marvel or DC. I'm like, he's Image Comics, you idiot.
I wasn't a big fan of Spawn either, but I didn't care like which publisher he came from. I'm just like, look, you know, he's a comic book hero. At least he reminds me a bit of Ghost. Yeah, like he's different. I mean, the closest comparison I could make would be Ghost Rider, but even then,
I can see that comparison.
Or the Crow or something.
Yes.
Or the Crow. Like even though I didn't enjoy that movie, there are things from it that I still remember.
Yeah.
Like the
good soundtrack.
Soundtrack was fine.
John Leguizamo was great in that.
John Leguizamo.
I remember him. Like he gave 1,000% to that.
Yeah.
Then I remember the PS2 Hell Dragon that he fights. that thing showed up. Wow. Yeah, I will never forget that. His head barely moves. I mean, the voice they got for that dragon was good, though. I'll give it that. Whoever was voicing that dragon head did a good job with that.
Definitely. Let's just say it's Don LaFonda. Who voiced the dragon in Spawn?
His name's Malbolgia, not Dragon.
Malbolgia.
It is voiced by David Sobel. Damn it. I have never heard of this guy. He looks like an angry Drew Carey.
That sounds about right.
he is known as Death Charge in Beast Wars Transformers. Gorilla Grodd. Yep, Gorilla Grodd in various DC media, Drax the Destroyer in various Marvel media, Shockwave in Transformers Prime, and Blitzwing in Bumblebee. That's awesome.
That's an awesome round right there.
No kidding.
Real. It's funny when you watch cartoons and shit, watch the end credits because you can see the cast and you see where everybody started and where they're at now. And it's amazing how many of them were involved in different medias.
Oh, yeah.
That was recent.
The one person I like the most that's been in so much media is Jim Cummings.
Oh, yeah.
He's the fucking Pooh Bear.
He's been everywhere.
And then you have Mark Hamill, who literally takes everybody's roles, including Keith David's.
And Danny Trejo's.
That was another thing that I... Oh, yeah, so I also started watching, like, the Batman cartoon.
Yes, and that's so underrated.
I started watching it. I like it. I like it so far. And, yeah, like, when his...
I actually don't know anyone who hates it.
Yeah, I like it. It's campier, but it's still got a little bit of darkness to it, which is nice.
The Scarecrow episode, hello.
And then who'd you say voiced the Joker again in that?
Mark Hamill.
No.
Kevin Michael Richardson.
Michael Richardson's take on this.
Underrated.
Yeah.
That dude's the voice of the Matrix. Yeah, that dude is amazing.
He was
yeah, Kevin Michael Richardson's take on the Joker is so full of its own unique, crazy energy. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like that. I feel like, again, similar to Mark Hamill, I feel like that guy could tell me the funniest joke and then shoot me in the head 5 seconds
after. Oh my God.
Yeah, Kevin Michael Richardson also did Batman's voice in DC Nation shorts.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah, and that, yeah, that surprised me. A lot of voices.
Yeah, he's great. And then I think Bruce Greenwood does okay as Batman. Under the Red Hood. I think the first thing I saw him in was the Star Trek reboot. So it took me a few minutes to not be like, Captain Pike is coming out of Batman now.
Yeah. What did he do? Bruce Greenwood did something in the 90s. I can't remember what the fuck it was.
He would be
the go-to guy for playing like federal agents, dads, and husbands.
I mean, he was in Double Jeopardy with Ashley Judd.
Just always being just either that congressman who's a bad apple or just
a bad husband.
He was still playing the bad congressman in The Post.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
but he made up for it because he was Kennedy in 13 Days.
I was going to say, that's the flip side. Like, right, he's so good as like JFK.
Oh, wow. National Treasure 2.
Yeah, like,
what the hell's going on here?
he's everywhere. He's probably got like one of the easiest supporting jobs in Hollywood. Just come in and play this jerk, or come in and play this authority figure. All right, I'm coming in.
Funny how it works.
Yeah, and it's amazing watching them go from physical roles to voice roles through their career. Backtrack on them, it's amazing because they'll start out, you know, doing his action roles, and then as they get older, they're like, "Yeah, I want to slow down, and I'm just going to use my voice for these characters now." It's a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they ask the question, do I have to leave L.A.?
Yeah, right.
if I have to go out of town, I'd rather not do it.
Mark Hamill, 8 a.m. Monday morning.
Speaking of that, Carl Lumley, who's the John Stewart on the Justice League cartoon.
Oh, sweet.
I recognized his voice immediately from Pacific Heights, which is like an early 90s thing. Michael Keaton is like terrorizing essentially like the world's first Airbnb owners. Carl Lumley is the guy that they don't sell to.
Yeah.
And so when I turned on Justice League and I heard, you know, John Stewart's being lit, I was like, wait, who is that? Why do
That's
I recognize
actually
like,
Phil Lamar?
Oh, no, John Stewart?
Yeah, John Stewart. He's voiced by Phil Lamar.
Sorry, I meant John Jones. Never mind. John Jones. I am so sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah.
They're all the same race, man.
Oh, no. No. Yeah, I meant John Jones.
That's all right.
He is
Carl. That guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those guys.
And then you've also got Michael Rosenbaum voicing Flash, which is a Smallville fan, is very fun.
His voice.
Dude does have a good voice.
Like, honestly, like as much respect as I have for like Gene Hackman and what he did in Superman, when I think of Lex Luthor, I think of Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah.
This very headstrong, confident guy who has like extensive monologues to give to anyone who enters his house.
It's strong to take you on. My bad.
I like trap, man.
But yeah, I know what you mean. It is intriguing in that they essentially they always kind of remind the audience in any of these like character face-offs to just kind of have fun seeing the villain, you know, like get kind of some Rocky moves in like on the hero, and then the hero just finally, you know, can't cough up blood, but gotta have like a scar on their face, and finally is able to kick their ass.
Oh yeah,
Wakanda forever.
Oh yeah, I thought Wakanda forever. Like, I was surprised I got to the end. I'm like, wow, I love this movie, and there's only one like Black Panther fight in it. That's impressive.
It was like, good, but like they edited the blood out. Like, really?
Yeah.
She gets shanked. Like, there's blood. Where's the blood?
Yeah, I was.
Well, I remember one critic said it best, where they were like, "They're going by Dark Knight blood convention." Is like they should be bleeding now, but they just aren't, and we're not.
They're amazing healers.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, whenever
like,
anyone
just cut away something.
Yeah, like whenever anybody tells, whenever I see people make the argument, the Dark Knight movies are so realistic. I go, but no, they're not. Like, if they were, people would be bleeding everywhere. They'd
people
be
would actually
in pain.
Be arrested at the bank robberies.
Yeah, but none of that matters because you have moments like the Joker's pencil trick, which is
Like,
man, he's a sharpening genius.
There's a difference.
He's a boner killer.
There's a difference between a grittier take on a story and a realistic take on a story. They may be mistaking the
quandary.
I don't think it's possible to have a realistic take on a superhero story, period, just because these characters are inherently not realistic.
If like a realistic one would be, what was the one with Dwight from The Office?
Super.
That's a realistic closest. Take, you know.
Yeah, that's probably the closest we'll ever get to, like, if a guy actually decided to be a superhero, this is what might, this is where their headspace would be, and this is probably what could happen to them.
Mm-hmm. This is The Boys, right? This is Invincible. This is they're trying that to some degree. It's fine, but it's a certain, you got to have a certain taste for that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and as far
go by the screenwriting rule that hey, there's going to be consequences. We're going to at least show if they're not responding in a realistic fashion. It's there somewhere, so. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I like Spider-Man 2 a lot, because it's a lot of, I think they show a lot of like consequences, like big and small, of like being a superhero. Like, you can't be places, people think you're just gonna flake on them.
Right.
You know,
Spider-Man 2 has one of the great moments, right? With the train saving moment is fantastic, right? Like, that's one of the legendary ones. Right.
Yeah, like the train bit, and like specifically like I love the bit in that scene near the end of it, where like they're all helping him
with his mask off.
Carrying him with his mask off, and they tell him like we're not going to tell anybody who you are. And then when Doc Ock comes in, they all stand in front of him trying to help him.
Yeah,
I really love that, because
that was a really good. Just, we needed that empowering moment. Just knowing
it's a great beat.
I also like the deleted scene that's never going to air of that, where, you know, Peter gets served with damages for what he caused.
I was thinking that. Oh yeah. So I showed Spider-Man 2 to my sister last week, and I was thinking, really? Like, yeah, I did. Coincidentally, I showed it to her last week, and I had shown her The Incredibles like 2 months ago. And so when we get to this scene, I'm like, oh, The Incredibles shows how this actually ends. Peter Parker is going to have a lot bigger problems than getting Mr. Ditkovich's rent by the end of this week.
Peter Parker's in hiding in Switzerland.
Yeah. he's trillions in to pay back. Got it.
New York.
That's the one. That's why I like Civil War's arc so much, because it actually showcases, you know, the real consequences of shit.
Right. Like, just because they're superheroes doesn't mean that they get off scot free.
Yeah. Ben Grimm escaping, going to.
They at least hint that they may not be enjoying themselves tonight or something, you know. It's to give you a sense, hey, this isn't playing around. And I can't not who's your personal favorite villain? Like, it seems like Zemo's kind
Magneto.
Of
Magneto.
Okay, so I see your old school pre-MCU. It seems like Magneto doesn't get enough love, but yeah, Zemo has been kind of a standstill because he's basically kind of like Dawkins and the Running Man, where he's making everybody fight each other for his own entertainment. And then
he's the ultimate killer. He can literally, he could turn the polar axis in reverse. He could use all the iron in your body to kill you.
Yeah. He reminds me, he's a little, it feels like they are kind of trying to make him basically be the Magneto of this world. They just haven't, he just doesn't, I don't know if it's in his skill set or not. I think he's just chosen to not ham it up as much as Ian McKellen does, you know?
Like, and showcase what Magneto can do, for sure. Where, like, Michael Fassbender, he did the same thing, but more on the he's more the emotional Magneto.
Yeah, whereas the fire is agent. I have not seen people
younger. That's actually, that was a cut character, emotional Magneto. Never really got written, but
I
a real heartbreaker.
I remember I saw Michael Fassbender in the Assassin's Creed movie, and I was like, dude, what are you, why are you here?
Even that movie was cut short. It's missing 25 minutes.
Oh yeah, like again, like I went, like my friend had the game on his Xbox, so I played it a little bit a week before just to get some idea of what the story was. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this movie going like, have you guys ever played this game? Because I've only played it for a week, and I feel like I have a bit better grasp on what you should be doing than you guys.
I also have the ultimate guide on my channel, too. That was a good book to read.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, the Assassin's Creed movie was like, what the fuck? It was good, but like it's missing 25 minutes of footage. Like,
if you mean it's built for. Yes.
No. I mean, if they ever release a director's cut that restores that 25 minutes, I'll check it out just to see like what got cut. Yeah. I wouldn't be expecting a lot at all. Just like, all right, what got cut out of this? Maybe there's a better movie here that we just didn't see.
Is it, am I wrong? I don't think there are that many people that care. Like, yeah, 25
no.
minutes, cut, but like,
no,
who cares?
No, but I don't know anybody who's been clamoring for like, release the director's cut of Assassin's Creed.
Release the Creed cut.
Release the AC cut.
Like, I don't think if that hashtag ever happened,
that would be funny.
Like,
we you guys just, should write that.
You should start it. Let's see what happens.
Fuck it, I'll do it right now. I have nothing else better to do.
We must see the 25-minute Now, a director's cut I would actually like to see is Josh Trank's Fantastic Four. Just
I love that movie.
I don't even know if he wants to see that release.
You mean Roger Corman? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, the 2015 one. Because I remember I saw the 2015 Fantastic Four and I heard how.
No, just kidding.
Yeah, I.
That's funny. None of my big Marvel moments came from that movie.
No,
weird.
No, they're not. No, it's, none of mine did either. I'm just saying. I remember seeing it. I like.
That's
the
one of the most grounded films ever.
Okay. So
they tried.
I think this is not. The what's his name? I think it was Joseph Culp played Dr. Doom in that. I would have actually liked to have seen him come back in like a voiceover in some fashion. Kind of like Eric Roberts did in that one audiobook version of a Doctor Who property. Just because he's in the infamous property.
A favorite scene that I do have, like I love the opening scene of the first X-Men movie. Just because of like I appreciate how it tells you this is not. I appreciate that it immediately makes you sympathetic to Magneto.
Yeah,
like,
you're instantly.
How do you? You're instantly like, oh yeah, you care about this guy. Like you don't even know who he is yet.
I'm glad you mentioned that moment.
But it's like, it's like, you know, you open it like that, you're like, you know what, dude? Whatever you want to do, I get it. This is horrible.
what happened to you, and then you're, and in First Class, it expands on that, and it's even more. It's like, oh yeah, no, I think that First Class makes him one of the most sympathetic villains in all of studio movies. Because like, when you get to the end,
like you say, you instantly feel sorry for the villain, and it's good at just kind of just giving you an idea that, hey, you're not watching the most typical like comic book movie at that time. And the way it's lit, I gotta applaud the cinematography, because it was very much like the first Blade, where it just that gritty that fill between a typical like T2 kind of blockbuster, like a
comic. That's why it's so good.
The widescreen anamorphic lens really capture everything that's going on, and you actually, I mean, much like Deacon Frost in that first Blade, you really like get into Magneto. You instantly believe what they're going after, and then you know that they're gonna always have a justification for every awful thing they're doing.
Yeah, or if you watched it and you see it, it's at an Auschwitz camp, you think, and you don't know anything about comics, like, is this another Indiana Jones film? Is he going to stop the Nazis in the camp?
Does
he have powers to stop them now?
Oh, no, that would be amazing. Magneto pulls an Indiana Jones.
I bring Michael Fassbender back and just have a random Magneto adventure where he's trying to like get some ancient artifact or something.
That's what Disney Plus needs to do. Let's just go back and have some random Magneto adventures.
Yeah, exactly. The working title. Marvel's random Magneto adventures.
Right. There you go. Would you like to know more?
No, right.
I don't know. I've been I'm late to the game on the Spider-Man game, but I just beat the PlayStation 5 Spider-Man game and been playing through Miles Morales, and I'm kind of stunned at how well written those are, especially once you get into Miles Morales and you get that relationship between Miles and Prowler.
They had like every other person from like Little Star in those games. They had freaking, I think number 6 was the name of the cat burglar gal.
The art books for the game are fucking awesome too.
It's incredible. It's really incredible. And that's one of the big moments. Like that sort of Marvel moment, like, you know, Peter on his knees at Aunt May's hospital bed is just like gut wrenching. It's so good. So good.
The way they designed Vulture in the original PlayStation game was really cool.
Yeah.
That's a character that's hard to design in any project. Like it's such a cartoony character in the comics.
Yeah.
That like when I heard that they were going to put the Vulture in a movie and video games, whatever, it's just like, oh God, really?
It just that
looks
terrible.
No, you got to say it, Bill Shatner. Like, oh God.
I remember hearing like when Ben Kingsley was supposed to be the Vulture in Spider-Man 4.
Oh my God.
Really? And then I looked up who Vulture was, like this old guy who wants to de-age. I'm like, yeah, Ben Kingsley can do that. And then it got canned. I'm like, that's too bad.
The portrayal, Michael Keaton, I thought Michael Keaton did a great job. I think that treatment of the character by Michael Keaton and like production design of the character was legit.
Oh yeah, super grounded. He did great in playing that. And again, another one of those moments where you immediately get why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, he's a working class guy. He got screwed over by the corporations. It's like, yeah, all right.
In that order.
You're not doing the right stuff, but I understand why you're doing it.
Yep.
You go on and do your thing, man.
Do your thing, man. Kill people.
Oh God, that reminds me of everybody, every stupid argument online about how superheroes don't kill. I'm like, Yeah, let me give you a list of everybody that indirectly killed somebody and how they're responsible.
Let me show you this scene in Batman Returns where Batman really puts a dude, a bomb in a dude's chest and then walks casually as it blows up.
Yeah,
let me show you Batman punching a woman. Men can't do that. That's misogynistic. Like, no, it's different.
That's what's so weird. It's
do you remember the argument with X-Men Apocalypse on the billboard?
Oh, I remember that argument.
So stupid.
I remember that argument going around. I was like, he's the villain of the movie. He's choking
a poor defenseless woman. Like,
it's to show his power. Like, I get it if somebody didn't like the image, but it's like they're not doing it just to shock people. They're doing it to show, like, look, she's a major hero character and he's a major threat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what the point of it is. It's not
it's not even about winning, but how dare we be in depth. So I'm glad you guys went into this chapter, because it really is getting very, even before it gets to toxic levels, it is just kind of invigoratingly frustrating how so many people will just kind of, with literally just, even when everything was just a click away, you want to fact check that before you go, version of this is
worst part about that shit is people will take Twitter as the end all final answer for everything.
Oh, you're bullying me. I just want to have a discussion.
Speaking of stuff that's just a click away. So, did you guys see, like, the new Ninja Turtles trailer that they dropped
yesterday? Not yet.
That's my problem. People want to react to every trailer, and it's like, that's not the movie, though. Well, you still have to actually watch it.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the thing is, so somebody shared a screenshot of a YouTube channel saying, oh my God, they diversified April O'Neil. This is horrible, blah, blah, blah. And then I find out the very next day, April O'Neil was black in the comics.
I found that out today. I was like,
I found that out yesterday afternoon. I was like, oh, so they're actually making a comic accurate, which means that this guy complaining about them diversifying the character has even less ground to stand on now. And not that he had any to begin with.
They likely haven't read it. They're pretty much there to just start up clickbait for all those.
Whenever I see that, I'm just like, guys, it doesn't
too much
really,
free time. You have don't too know much how to free make time. Anything.
It's like, and you're gonna complain about this? Like, it just happens. Like,
need to basically do. I mean, have any of you watched Mythic Quest?
No.
It's in its third season. It does a good job of making fun of the toxic gaming community and the developers who don't know anything about games. But
I think the funniest argument is when people will go online and be like, "This stuff is SJW woke," and yet the comics are all about political shit.
Yeah,
I'm like, you have, like, lost the argument.
You've never even read the comic. You've just, or you rented the first issue that had a gory cover or something, but you didn't actually get in depth or actually read what was on the page. You were just, I must hate this.
I do my best to try and avoid all of that, like, all the, like, instant hate stuff going around. It's like, it's the same as, like, look, man, I'm not going to judge the movie until I see it. That Turtles movie, like, that, I could love
and
that.
Until
Turtles
they get
movie.
An actual Don LaFontaine voiceover, I'm not actually watching the comic or the trailer because, I'll read the comic, but I'm not going to watch the trailer because I know they're going to just, like, they're trying to sell it versus, you know, what's actually in the movie. But so many people.
I mean, and that's the thing. Like, I don't know how the movie's gonna turn out. I could love it, I could hate it, but at this point, I'm like, look, it's out there. It piques my interest. I'll go see it because I like the Ninja Turtles, and I've seen every movie or every theatrically released movie they've made so far.
TMNT 2007.
Yeah, I saw that. oh yeah, I saw that when I was 12. I was like, this is
nice.
I remember I went to go see that with my dad, who's not a Turtles fan. 12-year-old me was having the time of my life. And I was like, Dad, wasn't that so awesome? He just wasn't, he was like, that was stupid. I was like, no, I thought it was awesome, actually.
You're a horrible son. I'm putting you back.
Oh, my God.
No, it's the thing. Like, I legitimately
have they ever tried to make them be part of Marvel? Or because I think they're now owned by UFC because they did like that versus with
Batman, Ninja Turtle
comic book.
They made Batman versus Ninja Turtles movie. I don't think that they're associated with Marvel.
I don't think so.
No, it's Turtles or IDW.
Yeah.
Mm. There you go. Okay. Interesting.
Okay. I'm just watching the trailer for the first time because I missed it. Holy crap. That animation is amazing.
Yeah.
That looks legit. That is great. That's like the same kind of like Spider-Verse vibes that I got with that trailer. Like, it's kind of chilling.
You can actually thank Valerie Thomas for that shit.
Ooh, it's good.
Yeah.
It looks good.
It does look great. Uh-huh. Looking at it now.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the only issue that I have with it is Donatello's voice sounds a little too young for me. It sounds a little bit too young
you
to
guys,
me.
You guys, chill.
Yeah it sounds a little
pretty. Yeah,
I know. Give him a minute. He's a young teenage mutant turtle. Cracks. You guys, chill.
It sounds like they're all teenagers, and he just sounds like the 10-year-old kid of the group or something. Right. Is his voice gonna mature over this film or over the course of the series or something? I mean, I don't know. That's the only thing that the cause
it's
for.
It's like the tween-age mutant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you guys, you slow down.
That's awesome.
Let's go get pizza, dudes.
Dudes. Famous last
words.
All right. So any other final moments before we close this out?
If we're talking moments, I have to call out one of my favorites, which is in Doctor Strange with Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
when he's training and he's finding out how to be a badass and utilizes magic.
No, when he's confronting Dormammu right at the end there.
And at the very end, the very
he puts
giant.
Himself into that permanent time loop, and it's just like it's such an interesting way to incorporate like just this. This whole thing with not necessarily having a big battle at the end, but it's actually like this, you know, I'm going to just let you kill me for the end of time.
Yeah.
Until
this is where he almost becomes kind of like the any version of the Prince of Persia, where he can mess with time and keep coming back to
Prince
life.
Of Persia.
Well, no, you know what I mean? Totally. Where you could undo time.
Yes.
And he is just playing with that time loop, and he's respawning over here and coming over here, and the guy's like, I will keep crushing you with my hand. it's insane just how he just keeps playing with the time until he finally is like, no, really, now I'm out of time. I gotta actually come up with a predicament here, which can give me the win.
I'm going through the list, my list of moments, and most of them are not MCU moments, which is weird because I'm on a MCU podcast. But the
like
one
what
that
you
that
like, dude, don't feel shame.
No.
Have
I
you
have no,
seen
no
this
shame,
whole podcast so far? We've been all over the fucking place.
No, podcast. My podcast is a Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. No, you guys are all over the place. The breakout scene in Future Past, the time in a bottle sequence where we actually get Quicksilver doing his thing, running around the kitchen.
Yeah, that was cool. Shit.
That was awesome.
That was amazing.
It was awesome. Croce was great. And I'm like,
very
God, get, like, this is what I want. Like, I want more I need more of those characters. But the ones that really the pinnacle moments for me are the callbacks in the MCU. And I think that's what one of the things that the MCU generally is best at is making like stupid joke callback lines emotionally powerful. And, you know, On Your Left, that starts in you know, Winter Soldier and ends in Endgame is incredibly powerful. And
hell, I am Iron Man.
I am Iron Man.
Yeah, I'm Iron Man's good.
Avengers, Cap catches the hammer, assemble. Like those beats,
yeah.
Like, they make me feel epic when I watch them, and they're incredible. They're
they
awesome.
Do a good job of taking a lot of Lord of the Rings type battles as well. Yes. As just kind of,
yeah.
I yeah. Mean, there's clearly Star Wars influence, maybe Star yep. Trek 4 because of how they'll have
yeah,
Star Trek 5 4, things going like on at four. Once. And then they're just like, and by the way, there's two other battles happening here. Here's yeah. the status yeah. shot so you can
so many
follow
things.
It.
Right, right.
But yeah. then they turn around and they can do stuff like the bus fight in Shang-Chi, which was like, oh,
that
you know what?
Cool.
They can do something
yeah, that was
different.
Great.
Like, that's new.
Yeah,
and
we're doing a homage to Speed.
Right? That, that was
we
great.
We can do Speed then, Kung Fu.
Yeah, and then I guess like, and then like, I guess another a moment similar to that, like, or it's like a thing they can make. Yeah, like they when they make moments powerful, like. Is the whole like the scene where Yondu tells Peter Quill that he's his dad,
oh,
and then
God,
oh yeah,
stuff. That
oh.
All, like Guardians 2 has moments of jokes that really, yeah. really, really, really do not work. But then all the emotional stuff they do in that movie, it has
amazing.
Me. I always cry. I'm like, I can't believe really? You're pulling this off. You're making me
yeah.
feel
yeah.
sad about this blue faced fish headed guy over here. Like legitimately, they do a good.
Yeah.
They do such a great job with that, given like how limited screen time him and Peter Quill mm-hmm. have together, and how in the first movie they mostly played him off as a gag, and it's like they made him into a real character. So when that happens, it's like it just hits you really yeah. hard, and they let it sit for a minute, and they let it just sit there, and the weight of it fall on you.
Yeah. Apparently, what's his name? Who's in charge of DC and Guardians?
Yeah, James Gunn.
James Gunn. Yeah, he's apparently all about just like unleash some unusual, just feelings, you know, and just
yeah,
how you've been wronged all your life. And
speaking of being wronged all your life, like this, those moments, like just I don't know. Sometimes I think I know too much about. Like movies and contracts and stuff, but I'm
you
telling
do.
You,
no,
when Iron Man says Underoos in Civil War and Spider-Man jumps into the MCU, I cheered, not because he was there, but because the lawyers agreed on something. And I thought,
yeah.
that's dope.
Yeah.
We can do anything
yes.
now, right? Like,
right.
that was so cool.
That was awesome.
Great moment. That was a great moment.
I hate that movie.
Oh, you hate Civil War? Oh.
Dude, that movie is the most watered down dog shit adaptation ever.
Okay, so what's your favorite?
My favorite is Doctor Strange 2007.
Oh, so the original Doctor
that
Strange.
Age, that age
the
as
anime.
Well.
Is that the animated one?
Yeah.
Okay,
I love
yeah.
that film.
Right.
Anyways, I'm glad.
I want to see how it is. Fuck you.
I just
you know,
can't
I
believe we're
of...
arguing over an animated.
How dare you?
But it's really funny, though, because you have so many people who have never read the comics, never watched the older films, and there are people who won't watch them because they don't want to sully their expectations. And I'm like,
dude, they do the same thing
you...
with Star Trek and Wars as well as the
I know, it's funny.
They don't understand that. To get to where you got here, you had to go here. You know, like Lord of the Rings had to be animated before it could ever be envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot are animated. It was beautiful.
If someone says, hey, coming, returning to NBC this year, we're doing our own take on Buck Rogers, I'll be like, okay, I want to see what you got. You know, because
that'd be interesting.
Certain things can be readapted. And
all in the family, but Black Panther style.
Oh,
Lord. I wish you had not said that.
Oh, wow.
All in the family, but he's a Black Panther.
I know
Panther.
They're remaking Mary Richard, so anything is possible.
Oh, wow. That's
starring Samuel L. Jackson.
Now you're actually selling me on this.
No.
I feel like his Django character where he's racist against everybody.
Exactly. Oh, God, it'd be beautiful.
I do think written and directed by Spike Lee. Before we tune out, what's your favorite like Nick Fury moment before we go? I know he's getting his own movie or some shit.
What did I like the Nick Fury?
Because I really hope they can do something interesting with him instead of just have him come up in the background and occasionally shoot someone. You know, like,
for real.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I want him to have already joined the Expendables or make another Star Wars appearance by this point.
Expendables.
I think he was in Spider-Woman Agent of S.W.O.R.D., if I'm not mistaken. I think he was.
Because so in the Spider-Woman movie, he'll appear. Yeah.
Well, she's going to be in Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm. Yeah. So there you go.
And that's one thing I like about Spider-Man. It's a title and a mantle, not the person. And a lot of people miss that shit a lot, and it's really sad. It's like, this person is Batman forever. I'm like,
dude, I've made a similar argument that James Bond is just a code name. Because no way any of these guys are the same persona or the same person.
True.
Just like if, and people have shown evidence that the creators, you know, can't be relied upon because they kind of contradict themselves in every interview. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, okay, if there's all these people who have the name Q or M, chances are.
Where's the rest of the alphabet, goddammit?
Agent S. And Spider-Man, I mean, there's several different Spider-Verses, so yeah, there's got to be a Spider-Man in every.
I'm still sad Idris isn't going to do James Bond. He's staying Luther forever.
I saw the interview. He said, like, he's not going to do it. I was like, why?
Dude,
like,
we know if I know.
Like, you'd be good at it.
Yes. Oh, God. He'd be so perfect. He has that charisma. And he
good.
Fits.
He was already in a really cool spy movie with Richard Madden from Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. The take. Cool. I saw that. That was really cool.
That was good. It's actually called Bastille Day.
I think it varies based on like what country you're in. Because I saw it on Netflix over in America, and I swear they called it The Take. I saw a review of it from a British YouTuber, and he called it Bastille Day. So I was like, this must be an internet. It must be an international thing.
Well, it's like cutie. It's like it's the same thing with cuties in French. It's McNonos or McNonos.
Okay.
And if you release it called Bastille Day over here, like nobody knows what that is, but people in Europe.
What is
it?
It's a French holiday celebrating the storming of the Bastille during the French Revolution.
F2PP.
It works every time. This has been lovely having you all on here. What can we expect next for the Marvel Minute?
We're continuing, as I said, our Avengers season. We're breaking that down 1 minute at a time. At the time of recording, we've released, I don't know, I think we're releasing episode 22 today, so which is minute 22 of the film, Steve Rogers in the boxing ring. But so that's going to be taking us into the fall, and then probably quick turnaround on that and jump into phase two. So cranking through these things, and it's a very slow process. But and if you're interested, you can learn more at marvelmovieminute.com or just go to, find us on any podcatcher out there.
A minute, that's faster than the Flash.
Flash.
The best premature ejaculator ever.
I can't believe I have that recorded. What the fuck are we going with this?
You are so welcome.
You are so welcome.
Oh, thank you.
It's staying.
That was great.
What superpower were we talking about?
Wakanda forever.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wakanda forever.
There's the Terminator count as a superhero. Jeez. Or super villain.
Leave it alone.
Stop it.
Fall. Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.